The right way to start your day. This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Lucas Haversick from 61, and the kick is good. New set of downs. As Brissett has the ball knocked loose.
Bumbo.
That's recovered by the Packers. First and goal from the 7. Inside the 5 to the end zone. Touchdown, Josh Jacobs. Third and goal. Brissett, Parsons again. Parsons takes down Brissett. The right side of Love, who fakes the handoff to Jacobs, and now throws, and it's taken in for a touchdown by Kraft. Hands it off to Jacobs, and he is in for a Packers touchdown. His second today. Need a touchdown from the 26. Here there comes Parsons. Wow. There's Brissett on fourth down. He throws through the end zone. It's batted down. Caught out of bounds by Jones. And that will be the exclamation point for the Green Bay Packers as they will take over on downs.
Scared money don't make money. So, like, you gotta, sometimes you gotta shoot.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Now live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studios with Gabe Neitzel and Mark Chamora. Here's Jen Lattis.
We will get back to the Green Bay Packers. Rob Domofsky is scheduled to join us in about a half hour or so from now. So we'll get back to the Packers. We'll talk about the green and gold on a Victory Monday presented by Palermo's. But something else did happen over the weekend, and we got to talk about it. The Brewers season. Yeah, we do.
All right, okay.
The Brewers season came to an end. Swept out of the playoffs at the hands of the Los Angeles Dodgers, Friday night, Shohei Ohtani, quite possibly playing one of the best, if not the best, games in Major League Baseball history that an individual can play, striking out 10 and then hitting 3 home runs. And not just three wall scrapers. I mean, 3 bombs for Shohei Ohtani in that 5-1 win that the Dodgers had over the crew. It's disappointing the way that it ended. We talked about them getting to an NLCS this year, and that's absolutely what they did, but having the best record in baseball, you're hoping for a little bit more of a fight from the offense. I know the Dodgers' pitching was really good, but just guys outside of a handful, were able to put together quality at-bats throughout the course of that series. It was just very un-Brewers-like.
So where does it fall in the ranking of scars for the state?
Why do you want to do that?
Because it's...
Because I don't think it's up there. It's not even the worst of this era. Like Game 7, like they got all the way to Game 7 in 18. And Chris Taylor made that catch in center field after Yelich hit a home run. Like it was back and forth in that series in 2018. And they got to Game 7 at home. Like it's not even close to that.
I don't understand.
I don't think it registers.
I don't understand your logic. Let me try and work this through. I don't understand your logic on... When Green Bay goes to the NFC Championship game against Tampa at home and loses to Brady, there's outrage. And when they get
swept... Yeah, because Brady threw 3 interceptions. Brady threw 3 interceptions in that game. Like, yeah, you had your opportunities. The Brewers got blown out here, Chew. This is, again, this is like the 2019 NFC Championship game where you got your doors blown off. You don't talk about the 2019 NFC Championship game as being on the scar list, or the 2016 NFC Championship game.
Where do you put this? All right, is it because you're doing it on a scale? Because baseball's unfair, and this is just what happens in baseball. And
no, because they didn't even get to a Game 7. They didn't win a game in this series,
which
makes
it worse.
No,
which makes it worse.
No, because they didn't get that close. They didn't win a game. They got their doors blown off.
They were the number one power ranked team. They had the best record.
They weren't the number one power ranked team.
How did Buster nail it?
Because the Dodgers are that good, man. Like, and again, you always love to compare things to football, despite me telling you how baseball is just not like football at all, man. It's just not even. It's just not.
So the 6-0 during the regular season
means
absolutely
nothing. I tried to tell you guys that at the time. It means nothing.
You know who nailed it? Sorry, I forgot all about the text over the weekend. Josh nailed it. Josh nailed it way back when people on the talk and text line were coming at him. Josh nailed it. Do you have that, Josh?
No, I don't. I should. I'll have it here in a second.
Gabe, he nailed it. He nailed it, and he nailed it in probably August or July.
The problem, well, so that was at the trade deadline, so that was the end of July when the Brewers did not acquire Eugenio Suarez. And then, you know, everybody loved making the Eugenio Suarez jokes because right after that, the Brewers got red hot, right? Well, in 14 in a row to kick off the month of August, getting them into the position they ultimately got into, and that's having the best record in baseball during the regular season. The funny part, though, about if you had acquired Caleb Durbin was one of the hitters that actually put together a good series against the Dodgers.
Yeah, no,
he was one of the guys, fantastic. and he would have been the guy that you sat had you had a Eugenio Suarez. So that's the cruel irony of revisiting that take.
So after this, the NLCS, do we discount the regular season even more now?
I've been trying to tell you, I told you guys as it happened when the Brewers swept the Dodgers, the regular season in baseball is just so dramatically different than the postseason. Like, you play it differently, you manage it differently, because, again, baseball, you're managing for over the course of 162. And over the course of 162, something might work and something might not work, and it just kind of evens out as long as you have this strategy. You got to do it differently in the postseason because it's over the course of 3 games or 5 games or 7 games if you're lucky. And you're just trying to collect as many wins as you can during the regular season. It doesn't matter who they are against. We did this a couple of years ago when on Wildy and Tausch, when Tausch and Jesse wanted to put Dunzo the Clown out and call the Brewers season over because they lost a couple of games to the A's, who were terrible. And obviously the Brewers went on to win the division and they made the playoffs and did all those things. You're going to lose some bad games. You're going to win some. You're going to beat some good teams. But ultimately, like, where those wins are coming from doesn't matter as long as you just win the games.
So what does it take for Buster Olney to say, okay, Dodgers in 7 instead of Dodgers in 4?
Unfortunately, that part's not going to get any easier. The Dodgers are going to have to be beat up. The pitching's going to have to be a little beat up. And now, a couple of reports coming out over the weekend. One saying that the Brewers could field offers. Again, it's not saying, oh, Brewers are going to trade. Like, some people saw this report and went, oh, they're going to trade him. They're going to trade Freddie. No, the report was the Brewers will likely listen to offers for Freddie Peralta because it's
before the start of the season?
Yes, because it is a weak starting pitching free agent market, and the Brewers could get a lot. It's not that they can't afford the $8 million for Freddie. They can obviously afford the $8 million for Freddie. Would be happy to pay the $8 million for Freddie. It's the what comes after that. Do you allow him to walk, or do you get more value for him by trading him because somebody's going to overpay? Then there was another report saying that the Dodgers are going to be very active in trying to acquire Kyle Tucker because their outfield is their weak spot. And Kyle Tucker is expected to be one of the top offensive free agents. So that if the Brewers trade Freddie and the Dodgers acquire Kyle Tucker, that would make that would not make Buster Olney go, hey, Dodgers in 7, right?
He'd say Dodgers in 3. Yeah.
Josh, so, you pull your clip up?
I do. I have it right here.
All right, let's
see. Josh, I heard you say on Friday you were questioning this organization's commitment to winning a World Series because they didn't go out and get a bat. Have you changed your mind after the offensive performance the Brewers put on this weekend? 56 hits in a 3-game span?
I certainly think the Brewers are a very good team. I also think they are not far away from disaster, not far away from a few things regressing and the Brewers having some real challenges scoring runs. I think Jackson Churio, Sal Frelick, we saw Miz go on the IL. Like, all these things are coming to a point here where the Brewers are winning at this point like 70% of their games. That's not a thing that really can translate. Teams don't win like that throughout the course of the season. I still think they're a good team. I still think they're a playoff team. But when it comes down to the playoffs, I still think another bat would have been integral to this team truly being elevated to one of the top-tier teams. Because if you look at the odds at Pottawatomie, they have the 8th or 9th best odds. The point I was making there, I think, got proven in a way I didn't really anticipate. Yes, Suarez wasn't great throughout the entirety rest of the regular season. Guess what he did on Friday, Chewy?
He won him a game.
Single-handedly propelled them to winning the game, hit two home runs, one of them a grand slam, and was a difference maker in that game. And what I was saying sort of all along is, like Gabe was saying earlier, in the playoffs, things change. They don't leave pitchers in to make mistakes. You don't get a lot of, let's be honest, a lot of grand slams because you play matchups perfectly. And what you need is a guy who's going to be able to single-handedly change the game with one swing of the bat. And I felt all along that the Brewers lacked at those positions. I thought it was great to see Caleb Durbin do what he did. I think Isaac Collins, all of that. But push comes to shove when you're looking at the Dodgers and their starting pitching lineup and some of the relievers who are still pretty good, but they're weak point for sure. Those guys are going to win those matchups more often than not against some of those guys in the Brewers lineup who aren't the big hitters and the consistent hitters. And I think that's was the biggest difference maker throughout this playoff series against the Dodgers.
So you're telling me the formula for the Brewers to win a World Series has to be the Brewers are hot and the other big market team they're going to be playing has to be banged up.
And look, this ended up being, because I've had a couple of texts like this one from Ryan. Imagine the Brewers shelved starting pitching for over half the season and how good and fresh their stuff would be in October. I mean, part of that is circumstance because they had legitimate injuries. They started the season like Tyler Glasnow and Blake Snell had legitimate injuries. And then they were fresh at the end of the season. But also the Dodgers could still win 93 games because that's how deep their starting pitching is. Like Clayton Kershaw, we didn't see, I mean, Clayton Kershaw started for them all year. And his career is basically over now, right? Pitch. Right?
Yes.
So they have, and that's what the money buys. The money buys you that depth for the Dodgers. Shohei Ohtani was coming back from Tommy John, so that's why he was kind of slowly ramped up for this exact reason, for him to be ramped up and ready to go and be able to pitch in the postseason. So that's why they did that. But yeah, the Brewers have to, they have to put together better offensive. Dave from Aaron, Brewers exit registers pretty on the list pretty low. I just don't understand the complete offensive collapse. I don't think anybody does.
Yeah, no.
Where like Christian Yelich just completely falls off the face of the earth.
The problem is I even think even if you get a pretty good series from say William and Christian Yelich, I still think the Dodgers are making it a 5-game series.
Yeah,
a six. Like they were so overwhelmingly better than the Brewers in the NLCS. Like it was two different brands of baseball being played. And even an improvement from some of those guys, maybe a healthy Jackson, like you maybe eke out a win and you take them to game six and it's a real close one. But this is...
I mean, they had their opportunities, you know? If you get a hit in game one and you steal that one, you certainly had your opportunities in game three. I mean, 2-4, you lost 5-1. But yeah, the offense let you down. The pitching actually ended up being fine.
Yeah.
The pitching wasn't the issue.
Yeah, sometimes Shohei Ohtani's just going to hit three monster
home runs. I mean, the one that he hit that went, by the way, StatCast is broken because there's no way that only went 479 feet or 69 feet, whatever they said it was. It clearly went over 500 feet.
Yeah, he hit that to the moon.
It was off the plate. It was inside. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even a strike. And he hit the furthest. I was doing National that night, Chew, and we played the highlight. Yeah. The sound of the bat. I don't know if I've ever heard something like that. The way it sounded when he hit that one that connected and went over the ceiling.
What were those?
Or over the roof.
What were those bats when we were younger that were like almost, they were like inflated, they were big, they had like, it was like a plastic and it made the loudest noise ever.
Like that big red bat? Is that what you're talking about? Yeah. Like that had the biggest barrel known to mankind?
Boing.
Boom.
Yeah.
And it made like a thunderous crack off. That's what that was.
Yeah.
That was near inhuman the way he hit that ball.
It was, and again, when you have Shohei Ohtani, he's going to do things like that. That's why he gets paid, well, or will be paid.
You just hope he
$700 million dollars eventually.
You just hope he only hits one or two a game. Three going to be hard to
three,
beat.
Three is tough to overcome. Three is tough to overcome.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Stacy apparently blaming me, saying I crowned this team before they played a playoff game. Okay, sure. My bad for being excited that they had 97 wins. I don't think I ever said the Brewers are winning the World Series, but I guess I'll wear it.
You just got to take that one on the chin.
Yeah, I'll just wear it. That's fine. That's fine, Stacy, if you want to blame me. I guess if I've got that much power, man, I got to start figuring out how to use that for good. But yeah, sure. I guess I'll wear it.
I guess you sum up the season just by saying it was entertaining.
It was a lot of fun, man. Like, I love this team. I love the way they played. I love the way that they adapted to Murphy's personality, and they were great. It was a ton of fun, and they had as good of a chance, I think, of getting to a World Series as a team that we've seen. And then the bats got cold, and they got buzzsawed.
I think we just saw the limitations of the style of ball they play.
Oh, everything has to. Well, I don't know if it necessarily. I mean, if the entire offense gets cold, yes.
Yeah, what I mean more is things have to go perfect, perfect, perfect throughout the course of the season. You play a great regular season, and then that carries over into the postseason, and you get some help probably in the playoffs. And you show up, and obviously you set the record for least runs in a NLCS by 8.
Is that what it was?
I believe 12 was the previous low mark.
All right, shout out. Hey, setting records.
Who won't be back from this team?
Reese.
Yeah.
For sure won't be back.
Is Terang a free agent?
No, they've got him under control. I think they probably want to sign him to some sort of long-term extension. But no, Freddie maybe. It depends upon what they want to do. They've gone both ways on this, where like with Corbin Burnes, they traded him. Same thing with Devin Williams, they traded him. But Willie Adames, they let Willie play out his contract and then just took the compensatory pick.
So then it won't be a reset.
No, I mean, a lot of this team, Chu, is going to be back next year. Yeah, a lot of this team is going to be. They've got some things to figure out, pitching-wise, certainly, what they're going to do with Freddie, first and foremost. Going to be interesting to see what happens with Brandon Woodruff, to see if he comes back or not. I believe there's a mutual option on his contract. There's a team option for $15 million, I believe, for Jose Quintana. But for the most part, the core of this team will be back in 2026.
Okay.
Hey, let me tell you about our good friends at Events by Design. You can boost culture with captivating corporate events like appreciation parties, brand activations, and more, because the creative team at Events by Design truly enjoys the work that they do. They believe that every event should not just be successful, but fun, and one that people talk about years later. And that, again, can just make a difference within your culture. Whether you're the one responsible for throwing that holiday party, or you just want to do something smaller, or have something with Events by Design where they just kind of help boost the event, the way they helped us with our golf outing earlier this year. But they've done huge events, big corporate events as well. So whether it's a big ask, whether it's a small ask, Events by Design is going to be able to help, because for over 25 years, Events by Design has helped companies execute successful events. Just search online. Events by Design. They design, you party.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
I just figured if I got the yellow ones from Mexico, I could slip those in without her. Did you know the Viagra in Mexico is yellow?
Had no idea.
Yeah.
Wait, can you just paint it? You just drop it in a little food coloring?
You probably
color
could,
it
like
egg?
An egg? I'm going to try that.
Easter has a new meaning in the Chimura household.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Wrapping up just a couple of Brewers thoughts before we get to Rob Domofsky on the Carpus Talk and text line. Alan saying a couple observations for the crew. One, don't fly the L. No, you can do whatever you want. You beat the Cubs. And all the Cubs fans that are just thinking that they're owing the Brewers with all these posts online after the Brewers beat them in the series. Hilarious to me. Two, don't wear Built for Fall or Built for October again. That's mandated by Major League Baseball. I don't know if you noticed, Alan, but everybody had Built for Fall or Built for October Baseball. They had all of that. That's Major League Baseball mandated. That's the gear you got to wear in the dugout if you're wearing the hoodie or the pullover or whatever. So that's where that comes. Dave from Aaron wants to know, what about Garrett Mitchell? I don't know. I know Mitchell... They were factoring in Garrett Mitchell this year, and he got hurt once again. If Garrett can stay healthy, I'm sure they'd love that. But again, his big problem is staying healthy. Just been a number of different issues that have popped up for Garrett Mitchell. He is a tremendous athlete. They want him in center field, or they've wanted him in center field. But it's just a matter of, can Garrett Mitchell stay healthy? And if he does, he will, I think, be a big part of this team going forward.
Like, I don't know what else you do. You won 97 games. You were the best in MLB.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
But again, that's where the postseason becomes just a different monster than the regular season. Ryan wants to know, why was it necessary to pitch a bullpen game the second game into the playoffs? The answer to that question is Brandon Woodruff got hurt. If Woody is healthy, Woody is going game 2.
Because you have Quintana. and Priester is your best option.
Well, but and, I mean, Priester could have gone that game, I suppose. It would have been better than pitching him on the road, and maybe it goes better at home. But also with Jose Quintana, they just weren't sure because he got injured late in the season. Like, the pitching injuries for the Brewers, where we thought they were going to have a deep rotation, they just piled up, and I think that kind of made necessary some of the bullpen games that they ultimately went.
Necessitated? I mean,
necessitated. There we go. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you.
If your pitching lineup next year is Freddie, Woodruff, Miz, Priester, Quintana, that's fine.
Yeah, and I mean, Chad Patrick could factor in there. Robert Gasser could factor in there. They really like Logan Henderson. They've got some options in the rotation. They just got to stay healthy.
Yeah,
and that's
and
a part
of Miz,
it.
And you let Miz go. Let the kid.
Next year, yes, I think they will.
Let him go.
I can't blame them for the way they treated Miz going into the postseason.
No,
because he wasn't very good. And then all of a sudden, the postseason, he became the Miz that we saw.
He was the best player.
Yeah.
For the Brewers, all postseason.
No. Jackson was their best player.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, Jackson Churio was their best player all postseason.
I think if they let him stretch it out, that's...
I mean, Miz was really good. Don't get me wrong, Miz was really good, but he also only pitched in two games.
Right, and I mean, he didn't have opportunity to play as more. I guess being every day is an advantage for Jackson,
yes.
But...
Yeah, and Jackson, like, just two postseasons in, basically he's going to rewrite the entire postseason record book for the Brewers.
Oh yeah,
like continued he continued to produce with a bad hamstring. Just continued to produce the list of players who continue to produce is short. It's Miz, it's Jackson, I think it's Caleb Durbin.
Mm-hmm.
Vaughn. I'm probably missing one. No, Vaughn didn't even play well.
Kind of feels like
Chad Patrick.
Yeah,
those are the four.
Yeah.
Those are the four.
And it kind of feels like Durbin wouldn't typically be in consideration had the Brewers not looked like they did in the final four games. Like, he was good. It wasn't like...
But he was consistently still putting up, like, the quality at-bats that you were expecting to see. I guess that's why I put him on that list. He is one of the few people who consistently seemed like he was battling putting together good ABs.
Durbin, you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, out of the, what, seventh or eighth spot?
Yeah.
That's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
You know? Getting some production out of the back end of the lineup.
I'm curious.
The front end was... Blah.
Yeah, I'm curious what if they try to move things around again.
I also think Abner was great, but they used him about as much as you could humanly use a guy who's used to one inning.
That's not actually true, because they used Ashby more. They used Ashby as much as humanly possible.
Well, and the results were pretty poor. So, credit to Abner.
I did an interview on Brewers warm-up with Doug Glanville, who was doing the game on Radio Chew, and he made the joke that they somehow had used Ashby 9 times in 8 games. I don't know how, but they've used him 9 times in 8 games. This is how much they've used. Hopefully that's not a part of the postseason pitching plan next year, is to ride a guy like that into them. Because I really like Kieran Ashby.
Yeah.
And I feel that a lot of Brewers fans don't like Kieran Ashby anymore the way that the postseason went.
He got put in...
really tough spots.
Yes. I think they relied on him a little too much.
Yes, I would agree.
He's still Aaron Ashby. He performed great through many parts of the season.
And I think he's still going to be a big part of their bullpen plan.
He's just not a guy that should be pitching that much in those biggest spots.
Correct.
Once or twice, I could justify it.
Heck, 3 times.
Yep.
Three. I'd say 3 times. That'd be fantastic. And not as much as he ultimately ended up throwing. We'll get back to the Packers. Rob Domofsky joins us next on Gen Game and Chew.
Josh, I love the intros, but man, that's last year's intro.
ESPN's number one source for green and gold information.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
Once again, Rob.
He's cracking the whip.
We did this last time. You have to speak on the show for me to give you an intro.
You know what? You're right.
Our most musically inclined and bald guest.
I feel like a jerk. I really do. Like, that was terrible.
It's Rob Domofsky on Gen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Well, at least in this situation, Rob said he felt like a jerk. Because Chewy yesterday, he said he felt like something else. And, you know, just for those who may have not been paying attention to the Matt LaFleur press conference, here's what our buddy Rob Domofsky did during that presser yesterday.
Happy for our guys.
Hey, guys, real quick. Mike is going to do it in the locker room, so if you're waiting on Mike here, he's going to be in the locker room. why we look like
No, you can go. I don't care.
Good. I'm sorry.
He had a career night. I mean, I don't blame you, Rob. That's right.
So you,
can he say that?
He just did. Our guy who felt like a Richard yesterday as he walked out of the Matt LaFleur press conference to talk to Micah Parsons, it's Rob Domofsky. Good morning, Rob. How are you doing today?
Gabe, my favorite part of that thing, and I heard it back, I did not hear this live because I think I was already out of the room by this point, was when LaFleur goes, can he say that? Or he just goes, well, he did. I mean, to be fair, they announced beforehand that Micah Parsons was coming to the podium after Matt LaFleur, and if people don't realize that the locker room availability to us and the press conferences go on simultaneously. So you have to make a choice. Like, am I going to the locker room or am I going to the podium? And I was in the locker room for a little bit while the quarterback was talking. And then I figured, well, I better get in there because Parsons is going to be up after the coach. And then they changed their plans and I felt like a you-know-what.
Richard.
I mean, it's you know, it is like it's not nice. I mean, it's kind of disrespectful to leave in the middle of
the presser.
I felt bad. I mean, I really feel bad, but that's the Packers. You know, they changed their mind, so I had to do what I had to do.
Rob, fill in the blank for me here.
Okay,
the Packers are blank without Micah Parsons.
I think they lose yesterday, so they are, what would that be?
3-2-1
Yeah, they are 3-2-1 with like.
I said average.
Yeah, I was going to say if you want something other than their record, they are in trouble, probably without Micah Parsons, on defense for sure. It's interesting though, Chewy. I don't know if you picked up on this or I guess I didn't realize without watching him on every play, sometimes you don't realize, you know, how teams are blocking him play in and play out. But, and I know I saw him chipped and doubled a couple times, but he said he couldn't believe how few times that they did that to him and how many one-on-one. He's like, usually guys like me don't get those kind of one-on-one opportunities. And we saw what he did. And I do think the one thing that's positive about this defense and not necessarily just Parsons, although his fourth quarter was really good too. He had 4 of his 6 pressures and 2 of his 3 sacks in the fourth quarter. But they closed the game defensively, you know, which was, I think, something that those defensive guys, including coordinator Jeff Hafley, really kind of were they were not overly happy or thrilled or even thought the fourth quarter defensive stories and narratives were fair. But I guess they finally did something about it.
Well, if we're going to talk about the defense, let's talk about Nate Hobbs. Is he being miscast and misused on the outside? Because he came here as a pretty decent slot player. Yes, the injuries were a concern, but he played the slot pretty well for the Raiders before coming here. The Packers decided to put him on the outside, and it just has not gone well.
No, it hasn't. And, I mean, he did have a recurrence of the knee injury yesterday. Well, I shouldn't say it's a recurrence. He had a knee injury yesterday, and he also had a knee injury previously in camp. Still don't know if they were it's the same knee or not. There were, quite frankly, just too many other people to talk to get to that yesterday. But I do think, especially the way Carrington Valentine played in the preseason and the training camp, I mean, that guy, I think Valentine, other than Omar Brown, who didn't make the team, I think Carrington Valentine had more interceptions in training camp practices than anybody. And he barely played, you know, on defense when Hobbs has been healthy. So I do think they need to either look at him and figure out, is the injury limiting him, or is he just not that good, or is he just miscast at, you know, as an outside corner? Well, the problem is, if he's not an outside corner, then what do you do with him? You
know, Javon Bullard's been really good as the slot guy.
He's been really good. Yeah, he's been really good. Now, you know, Keyshawn Nixon somewhat successfully made the transition from a slot guy to the outside. So maybe they thought that they could do the same thing with Hobbs, but it so far has not worked.
Rob, from an offensive standpoint, LaFleur said it didn't hum because they were playing a lot of 4-shell or cover 2 or whatever. But those are running formations.
Yeah.
Those are formations you run. Why aren't they as successful running the ball this year as they were last?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's offensive line issues. I think there's just some you know, some holes that aren't necessarily there. I do think when, you know, they got pressured a bunch too up front in the passing game, and I know run blocking and pass blocking are different, but I think when you're an offensive line or an offense in general and your quarterback is under the heat, which I thought Love was far too much yesterday, it can affect the run game too, right? Even though it's not, you know, it's a different, you know, different blocking style, different whatever, but like, I just think it trickles down to the run game as well when you're having trouble protecting the quarterbacks, and they've got to keep, you know, they got to give Jordan a little bit more time than they gave him yesterday.
It is Victory Monday. It's brought to you by Palermo's Pizza, Wisconsin's hometown pizza. Delicious brands like Palermo's, Connie's Urban Pie, and Screaming Sicilian. Palermo's has your game day covered. Find Palermo's in your local grocer's freezer. But the offense did target someone for 10 targets for the first time yesterday. Tucker Kraft, 5 catches on 10 targets. Was that just a product of this is how the defense lined up, or are they trying to make that conscious effort to get the ball into Tucker Kraft's hands more, who is now their leading receiver, by the way, in terms of yards?
Yeah, I do not think it's a conscious effort. And the crazy thing is, I looked down at this, I think it was right at the start of the fourth quarter or very late in the third quarter when Trey McBride had caught his second touchdown. Like, he had, at that time, had like 7 catches for 50, 60 yards and 2 touchdowns. And at that time, Tucker Kraft had 1 catch for 6 yards on 2 targets, I believe. And I'm thinking to myself, it's, you know, if they think Tucker Kraft is every bit as good as McBride, if not better, and I think that they do, why not go at it the way that the Cardinals went at it yesterday? I'll forever think to myself, like, I know they say that they throw to the open guy and they go through their reads. Well, on that fourth down conversion, it was a 15-yarder to Kraft, if I'm not mistaken. Jordan and or LaFleur both said yesterday that Kraft was the third read on that play. So, like, I mean, it's not like they went out and intentionally did it. And I'll go a little bit back to the first quarter with this game. I mean, Matthew Golden had 3 catches on the opening drive.
Yep.
How many did he end up with?
4.
Yeah.
4.
Like, and that, yeah. So I mean, like, they didn't go back to him for till I believe that fourth one was well into the second half. So I just don't quite understand it.
Rob, at the time, what did you think of LaFleur deciding to go for it on fourth down instead of kick the field goal? I didn't like it. I'm like, if you're the better team on paper, you tie the game up. I mean, because if they don't get that, and, you know, there could be a drop ball, anything could happen. Yeah. The game's over. What did you think at the time?
Okay, so just my thought process was, as the down and distance came up, I'm pretty sure I said to Matt Schneidman from The Athletic next to me, I go, you got to go for it here, right? And he said, yeah. And then they sent the field goal team out, and I said, I don't understand this necessarily, because even if you make that, you got to score twice, right? Because that just ties the game at 23. So, I mean, if you get it and score a touchdown, you know, in the way, you know, the Parsons is playing, you got a chance to win the game, and that's what happened. So I liked it. I mean, I can say that at the time, too. I said it live, and, you know, obviously when they called timeout, they were going to switch it. You don't call timeout and then not go for it. I know a couple of buddies of mine were texting me, you know, awful decision. I don't care about the result. The decision was wrong. And I understand that thinking, but I don't know that there's a wrong decision there. You know what I mean? I think it's a win-win situation. You know, and I think the chances of converting it, if you feel like you have a good play on, are pretty good.
Talking with Rob Domofsky, as we do each and every Monday here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. They have a kicker who was trying to be a substitute teacher, and now he has the franchise record in Lucas Haversick with a 61-yard field goal.
Yeah.
Brandon McManus is going to be the kicker. They gave him $15 million this offseason. But what do you do with Lucas Haversick? You probably just have to release him, right? Is anybody actually going to give you a conditional seventh-round pick?
They might. I mean, that's typically the sign and release thing is usually the way it goes for rent-a-kickers. But in this case, You know, assuming McManus is back, and you know, someone before the game told me that they were definitely, you know, most likely going to sit McManus yesterday and might even sit him one more game. What's the trade deadline? Is it like early
November? 4th.
Yeah,
so 2 weeks from tomorrow. I
mean, yeah, so if let's say they hold on to him for one more week, and he, you know, what is he, 10-for-10 right now with like you said, the franchise record. If he adds three more, doesn't miss anything in Pittsburgh. I mean, and the situation would have to be right for a team that needs a kicker, right? Somebody gets hurt or somebody has a terrible day, to actually say, I'm going to give you a sixth or a seventh, or maybe they do the 6-7. Oh, I can't believe I said that. Sorry. the 6-7 swap. I think you saw that earlier with a trade a week or so ago, right? Like you trade a player and a seventh for a sixth or something like that. I think that happened in the league last week or the week before with somebody. So maybe there's a chance. I mean, look, what he's done has been just, you know, it's been downright amazing and unexpected. You know, for a guy who hadn't kicked in the league since the 2023 season, didn't kick one time last year, was not on a team, I don't believe, last year at all. It's pretty remarkable at a position where it's, you know, there's no gray area. It is you either make or you miss.
So just to kind of revisit with Haversick and Chewy talking about that decision, it seems like to me there's no rhyme or reason when LaFleur does or doesn't do things or be aggressive, because I don't think anybody would have blamed him, Rob, if they just took a knee at the end of the first half. But instead, hey, 7 seconds left, we get the ball at the 35 because of the touchback. Hey, let's just try to push it down the field, and you end up getting what ends up being a pretty significant 3 points off of the 61-yard field goal. But then, at the end of the game, his initial reaction was, hey, let's kick it instead of being aggressive. It just doesn't seem like there is... I don't know if there are rules that he lives by in terms of when to be aggressive or not.
No, I don't think so, Gabe. That's a good point. I think in the past we've heard him say it was a gut decision, and I do think that, you know, he goes off the gut, which, you can go off the sheet. Like it was the old 2-point, you know, when people didn't used to go for two very often, and it was like, well, the sheet told me not to go for two. But the sheet never tells you when to look at the sheet. Like, at what point do you start looking at the sheet? You know what I mean? That was that was my always thing. Was, well, the sheet said I should do it. Well, who told you when you should start looking at the sheet, kind of thing? I going back to the end of the first half, this is another press box chatter moment. When they came out, I actually said to Schneidman sitting next to me, I go, man, they're in the huddle a long time for just taking a knee. Like, is the take a knee play call really that long? Like, I mean, I swear to goodness I said it. And I was like, well, I guess that's why it took so long, because they had that play on. And as he dropped back to pass, obviously had flashbacks to, was it the Dallas game where they had the really bad turnover late?
Yep.
And I was like, oof. They were more towards the middle of the field on this one than they were in Dallas, I believe. But yeah, not one that I would have done. But I guess credit to him for and the quarterback, and was it Dobbs, I think, on the play for catching it, getting down, and making sure they had enough time.
Chewy, look at our guy Rob. Gets caught saying a couple of curse words on an open mic yesterday, and now he's going to swear to goodness. He's just really editing himself on the air today. He's gun shy now.
I am. I'm completely freaked out.
Watch those hot mics. They'll bite you.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's all right.
Rob, we certainly appreciate the time, buddy. We'll talk to you again next week. Have a safe flight back from Arizona.
So I have to come home. I have to leave the sunshine.
You
and
do.
You
do. It was, and it's not going to make you feel any better, but when I got up to walk the dog this morning, I believe it was 41, and it felt like 36.
Yes.
Well, there's I look out my hotel window across the street is the Biltmore Golf Course, and I didn't get to play it, but I at least got to look at it. So I'll have that image in my mind for the next 6 months.
Appreciate it, Rob.
All right, guys.
Rob Domofsky joins us each and every Monday here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Bucks basketball is back. It's time to play. Bucks open up the regular season coming up on Wednesday against Washington. You can watch Miles Turner playing his first regular season game as a Buck. Nothing compares to the energy of Fiserv Forum. The raucous crowd, freakish slam dunks, buzzer-beating three-pointers. Get in on the action with the ticket plan that works for you. Learn more at bucks.com/tickets. That's bucks.com/tickets.
It's Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Josh said it's garbage.
I'm so glad that Josh is getting a front row seat.
He said it's it doesn't work.
Chewy,
am I right or wrong?
We call that a setup in the biz.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Josh Tomasio here from my friends at Wanna Parlay, my favorite daily fantasy sports app with the absolute largest payouts on parlays. We've got ourselves a Monday night doubleheader tonight. I'm looking at Mike Evans to score a touchdown, Jahmyr Gibbs to have over 90 and a half rushing and receiving yards, Woody Marks over 15 and a half receiving yards, and Ken Walker over 12 and a half rush attempts. Here's what you should do. Download the Wanna Parlay app, click around, and when you decide to upload money to play and get into the action, use promo code JGC for a 100% deposit match for up to $250. Download the Wanna Parlay app, use promo code JGC, and let's play the world's richest parlay today. You must be 18 years or older to play. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER today.
Pointing out that it could have been a four-sack game for Micah Parsons had it not been for the hip drop tackle. I guess that I completely forgot about the hip drop tackle because I believe only one was actually called in a game last year. Now, guys would get routinely fined for the hip drop tackle, which was banned in the NFL last year. That is the first flag on a hip drop tackle this season.
Is he going to get fined?
Probably.
That was a hip drop. Yeah, it was a hip drop. That's a
garden variety.
I was about to say that it was kind of textbook.
It felt so confusing because I know it's a rule, but it had only been called one other time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Ever. And I'm watching like what did they throw? At first I thought it was like a high low thing.
Yeah.
Because he also had gotten hit by a second guy, and then the hip drop it made sense. And he'll probably get fined for it too. Now, you get fined for every personal foul penalty at this point. That's a personal foul. Wilde and Tausch, they keep it rolling on Victory Monday. Coming up next.